Ukraine recaptured the city of Izum. Now the horrors of Russian occupation are coming to light,
including hundreds of bodies hastily buried. More from Izum in a moment.
I'm Aisha Roscoe.
And I'm Scott Simon, and this is Up First from NPR News. Also, Florida Governor DeSantis defended his move to send dozens of migrants to Massachusetts.
And blamed President Biden for it.
I think what we're continuing to do is use every tool at our disposal to insulate the state of Florida from the negative ramifications of his reckless border policies.
And millions of Omicron booster shots are available, but are millions of people getting them?
So stay with us. We've got the news you need to start your weekend. Ukraine's counteroffensive continues to move eastward. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says his forces have taken thousands of miles back from Russian occupation. It's been a significant shift that also comes with grim discoveries.
On the outskirts of the recently liberated city of Izum, investigators have found what Ukrainian officials call a mass grave. NPR's Kat Lonsdorf was there as forensic experts and teams of workers uncovered dozens of bodies. Kat, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey there.
Certainly we want to keep in mind, there might be young and sensitive ears listening. Please tell us what you've seen.
Yeah, it was a pretty surreal scene. We were out in the woods next to a city cemetery. And this was in an area that had recently been controlled by Russians until, honestly, just a few days ago. So there was active demining going on by the Ukrainians. So there were these big booms punctuating the otherwise somber silence. And as my team and I walked through the trees, we came across rows and rows of handmade wooden crosses, each one marked an individual grave. Some had a name and a date written on them. Others were just a number, unidentified. And there were a bunch of workers wearing PPE digging out each grave one by one, exhuming each body, examining them, putting them into body bags. And I have to tell you, the smell was pretty overwhelming. It was a little hard to breathe as we walked around watching this. There were a few dozen bodies dug up when I was there, but investigators expect there may be as many as 500.
Kat, what are Ukrainian investigators looking for?
Well, they're trying to identify all the bodies, but they're also looking for cause of death. They're taking meticulous documentation, especially to find any possible evidence of war crimes. I talked to the lead war crime prosecutor there, and he told me that they've already found evidence that could amount to that. And I can tell you, Scott, that I personally saw at least one body with their hands tied behind their back, for example. This burial site was essentially a makeshift graveyard for civilians during occupation. So basically, whenever anyone in the city died, they would bury them here. And I want to just be clear, investigators won't say yet who ran the site, but this wasn't a dumping ground for bodies. It was respectfully created. I talked with one older man who was there who said his wife was buried there. He was with her when she died during an aerial assault. And he said he had to pay the Russians a good amount of money to just allow him to bury her here. It seems like, though, people in the town were burying anyone who died here, any civilian. And a lot of those people were either unknown or unrecognizable because of the way they died. So they were buried without being identified.
Kat, what does the city of Izum look like today?
Yeah, the city is just absolutely destroyed. The Russians took the city on March 1st, so that's less than a week after the invasion began. And then they made it the hub for their operations in the area. Residents didn't have much time at all to flee. So thousands of people were living there under occupation for the past months. They've mostly been without electricity during that time, generally without running water. And there were no communications, no cell phone. Internet was all jammed. There was one radio station, but it was Russian propaganda. I talked to one woman, 36-year-old Oksana Kuchura. She was waiting in line for humanitarian aid in the city center, and she was with her two small daughters, aged 8 and 13. And she told me they'd waited out the whole war living like this, but it had taken a toll on her kids, of course.
Молодша та зовсім плакала, постійно просилася виїхати.
She told me the youngest one, the 8-year-old, was pretty much crying all the time, begging them to leave. But of course, they couldn't, and they rarely even left the house. So while everyone I talked to seemed very relieved that the town was back in Ukrainian hands, I should say they've been told that they shouldn't expect to have heat working by the winter. So the hard times are not over yet for the people there, I'm afraid.
NPR's Kat Lonsdorf, thank you so much.
Thanks, Scott.
Fifty Venezuelan migrants say they were flown from Texas to an island in Massachusetts under pretense.
Local authorities in Martha's Vineyard say they had no warning of their arrival. Even though they flew from Texas, the migrants' flight was arranged by the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis.
Massachusetts authorities have now moved the migrants to a military base on Cape Cod. Member station WBUR Simone Rios talked to several migrants, and he joins us now. Good morning, Simone.
Good morning, Aisha.
So you were on Martha's Vineyard. What did the migrants there tell you about how they got there?
Yeah, I mean, the universal story among them seems to start in Venezuela. They trekked through the jungle of Panama. Kids as young as 2 to one gentleman who's almost 70 among these 50 Venezuelans. So they came up through Central America to Mexico, into the U.S., and after presenting themselves to border officials seeking asylum, they were released and ended up in San Antonio. Here's where it gets weird. Several of them told me they were approached by a woman who promised to get them to a sanctuary area where they'd be taken care of. So it's unclear who this person was and who she was working for, but she coordinated the flight to Massachusetts. So they knew they were coming here, but they didn't know they were going to this wealthy, secluded island until they were on the plane. And they had no idea about the larger political story unfolding around them. I spoke to one young immigrant who wouldn't use his name for fear of deportation. He says he fled Venezuela for his safety. He was worried about both crime and the authoritarian government.
Nos utilizó.
We were used, he said. We were tricked. This woman told us we would have a place to live, monetary support, we'd be fed, and even given English classes. So now Governor DeSantis of Florida says these people went to Massachusetts voluntarily. And his rationale for chartering planes from Texas to Martha's Vineyard was that the Venezuelans could have ended up in Florida. And he says his state has the money to move more migrants to places considered sanctuary jurisdictions.
These people were sent to Martha's Vineyard to make a point. How were they received?
There was an outpouring of support, really. Many islanders felt compassion, saying the Venezuelans were being treated as pawns and doing everything they could do to help. But it also seemed absurd to people on the island that the Venezuelans would come to this tiny place of 20,000 residents going into the cold season, you know, with very few jobs, almost no housing available on Martha's Vineyard. Leading the effort to house and feed these 50 Venezuelans was Lisa Bel Castro. She's the coordinator for Martha's Vineyard's homeless shelter. I talked to her as the migrants were being ferried to Cape Cod.
Everybody had everybody's back. And whatever you needed, you're just like, you text someone, you call someone, or they offered, you know, and it's like all the organizations work together and the whole community came together.
Now Bel Castro says she's hoping to stay in touch with all 50 of the Venezuelans as they navigate this new country.
They're now being housed at Joint Base Cape Cod. Any indication about what's next for them?
Yeah, I mean, we should say first, they're not in custody, right? So they willingly were transferred to the base. An attorney representing them I spoke to last night said it's a very good situation there, and he was in there for most of the day yesterday. That's Ivan Espinosa, the head of Lawyers for Civil Rights in Boston. He said being on the base will allow the Venezuelans to access medical and legal attention. He said one boy seemed incredibly traumatized by the journey, just no affect and totally unresponsive. Now that boy will receive psychological care at the base, you know, and that's just a sample of the kind of help they'll be getting at Joint Base Cape Cod. And the lawyer told me these people are really better off on Cape Cod as opposed to Martha's Vineyard. It's an hour from Boston. It's where all the resources are, you know, and it doesn't require a ferry to go to the island. And he says they're definitely better off here in Massachusetts than they were in Texas just a few days ago.
That's WBUR Simone Rios. Simone, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
When COVID vaccines rolled out in December of 2020, people across the country scrambled to get a jab. We're now a couple of boosters down the line. There are new shots designed to protect against the now dominant Omicron variant.
They're available to everyone 12 and older, but are people still eager to get them and avoid a winter surge of infections? NPR health correspondent Rob Stein is here with the numbers. Rob, thanks for being with us.
Nice to be here.
So these new boosters have now been available since Labor Day weekend. What do we know about this rollout?
The government ordered more than 170 million doses of the new shots, which are updated versions of the Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech vaccines that match the Omicron subvariants infecting people right now. About 25 million shots have been shipped to more than 26,000 doctors' offices, pharmacies, clinics, and other places around the country. And unlike earlier rollouts of the vaccines and boosters, there appears to be plenty of vaccine available and no problems getting a shot. I talked about this with Claire Hannon of the Association of Immunization Managers.
I haven't heard of any people having to wait. I had an easy time getting an appointment. When I made an appointment and I went, there were many people that came in as walk-ins. So I think it's very easy to find the vaccine.
But you know, Aisha, the big question is, how much demand will there really be for these new boosters?
I mean, so do we have a sense of how many people are, you know, able to get them, eligible, and how many people have actually done so?
Right. So more than 200 million people are eligible for the new shots. The government hasn't released any numbers yet about how many have actually rolled up their sleeves so far. That's supposedly coming next week. But, you know, it could be slow going. Most of the people who have been eligible for the first two boosters never got them, and demand has dropped with each new round of shots. Lots of people have just kind of moved on from the pandemic. I talked about this with Jennifer Cates at the Kaiser Family Foundation, which has been tracking the vaccination campaigns.
I do think it's going to be an uphill battle. I do think it's a tough sell. Just because of where we are on this point in the pandemic, people are weary. People are not sure about what's the benefit to me. Why should I do this? I guess I'm a little pessimistic that this is going to move them.
That said, Kate says some people who skipped the earlier boosters say they've been waiting for new shots that target the latest variants. And Claire Hannon says so far, demand seems on par with previous booster rollouts.
So what is the Biden administration saying and doing about this?
The administration just launched a new campaign to try to convince people to get the shots. Federal health officials are emphasizing that while it may seem like the pandemic is over, hundreds of people are still dying every day from COVID. Another wave could very well hit the country this fall and winter. I talked to Dr. Ashish Jha, the White House COVID-19 response coordinator. He thinks many people are waiting to get their new shots with their annual flu shots, and the new shots could be more enticing because they're hopefully the last booster people will need for at least another year.
I am hopeful that people understand that with fall and winter ahead, the risks as people gather, we're going to have very little mitigation. You're not going to see a lot of mask wearing and social distancing. People want to gather safely for the holidays, over Thanksgiving, over Christmas. It's going to be really important for people to get this vaccine.
So Jha says anyone who hasn't gotten a shot or been infected within the last 3 months should get one of the new boosters and is urging people to get the shots by Halloween so they'll be protected through the winter.
That's NPR health correspondent Rob Stein. Thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you.
And that's Up First for Saturday, September 17th, 2022. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Aisha Roscoe. On Up First tomorrow, Chinese authorities detain a Uyghur man's wife and children. We have the story of his work to reunite his family. Follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And you can turn on your radio for much more from us every Saturday and Sunday morning on Weekend Edition from NPR News. You can go to stations.npr.org. Find your NPR station.